You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, an extended interview with the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank, Matt Comyn, who goes through his record results and his take on the economy. A productivity warning about real wages and reporting season rolls on. All of that and plenty more coming up next. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 13th of August, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market tumbled from a record high, the ASX 200 off by 0.6%. We'll have the details later on with June Bailu from TenCap, including what she's telling her clients. But first, profit reporting rolls on and the Commonwealth Bank recorded a cash full-year profit of $10.25 billion. That is a record, and it's up 4%. Its business banking division growing faster than its retail unit, and it declared a full year dividend of $4.85 per share. So for more about the result and for his take on the economy, I spoke in detail with the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank, Matt Comyn. Matt, so a record $10.25 billion full-year cash profit. How do you explain the need for the bank to post these kinds of numbers to the general public, many of whom are doing it tough during a cost-of-living crisis?
Well, great to be with you. I mean, first of all, what I think this result does show is that we're able to support our more than 16 million customers. We've been able to support both financial stability and economic growth, and the Commonwealth Bank is effectively leveraged to the underlying growth of the Australian economy. Every day, we help 400 households buy a new home. We've lent $115 million to businesses, and we've invested more than $900 million, as an example, over the course of the year into cyber, financial crime, fraud and scams. That growth has resulted in a profit that's grown by approximately 4%. Of course, 80% of those profits are then distributed via our dividends to more than 13 million Australians, either directly or indirectly.
But still, $10.25 billion, that's a pretty huge number.
Well, Ricardo, it's also just a function of the size. So as the economy grows, the Commonwealth Bank's balance sheet grows because we have to extend that to allocate capital to sectors of the economy. We have a $1.3 trillion balance sheet, which I accept is also a very large number. Actually, the return on equity, which is the best measure of profitability as opposed to the size of the profits, actually reduced year on year. There's just a scale of the Commonwealth Bank, which means that the profit number is large. And I think that's just really important to put into the context of what we do every day to support both our customers and the economy. And we do that with absolute pride. But as the economy grows, the Commonwealth Bank hopefully will continue to grow alongside it.
What about investors looking at price and wondering, can the strongest bank in the sector really get any stronger? What's your message to them?
Well, again, one of the things that we think about, and we have to be thinking about, is the long term. And look, of course, we're very conscious of the millions of Australians who own our shares directly and indirectly. We're one of the most widely held stocks. There's always a lot of interest in our share price. From our perspective, the things that we should be and are focused on is making sure we're delivering a very good proposition for our customers, hopefully better than anyone else, running the business, sustaining in our strategic priorities over the long term. If we get all of those things right, that gives us the opportunity to be able to deliver a sustainable and reasonable rate of return to our shareholders and owners. And luckily, I'm not in the business of giving financial advice. We just try to deliver on what we say we're going to do and against the long-term strategy of the Commonwealth Bank, and shareholders make their own decisions about where they would like to invest their money.
Retailers like JB Hi-Fi and Nick Scali reported last week that numbers are improving and are up in July. Your own data released today showed that discretionary spending is up across all age groups and they're all saving more compared to this time last year. Plus, a big proportion of your owner-occupier borrowers are opting to not reduce their minimum monthly repayments.
Yeah, look, I think there's a few things that you've mentioned there which are very important. I think, first of all, I'd say that we still hear directly from customers, and I know this is the case for many households, are still finding their pressures on their budgets to be challenging. That said, what our numbers show, and you indicated some other companies that are seeing similar trends, is that there has been a rebound across many cohorts of the economy. We're seeing that in the context of, you know, inflation is now moderating and back into the target band. We're into an interest rate cutting cycle, which is, of course, good news for people with outstanding loans. We've had things like the tax cuts come through, so we've seen a rebound in disposable household income. That's been, I think, particularly challenging on some of our younger customers. So you're seeing a rebound in both discretionary spend as well as the ability to increase savings. So I think they're all healthy signs. There's still, obviously, I think we'd all like to see higher growth, but it's definitely a noticeable rebound and an important one. I think the momentum will continue and we'll see 2%. And you're quite right, as rates have reduced, we've seen only about 15% of our customers actually reduce their repayment amount. And so, we, you know, it's probably a little bit lower than we had otherwise anticipated, but it also gives you a good indication, and we see that more broadly, that customers are able to keep making their repayments. The number of customers that are requiring financial assistance actually down 19% over the course of the year. And so notwithstanding the pressures, I think we're through the worst of them. Some of the challenges in aggregate, I think the economy, many households, many businesses are starting to see better operating conditions, which I'm sure is a welcome relief to many.
Now, what do you see as the biggest threat to the Australian economy? Because we've got geopolitical concerns threatening global growth, locally productivity really lagging, or are there other things?
No, I think they're the main issues. I mean, Australia's had decades of high economic growth and productive and extended mining boom. We also had a lot of stimulus post-COVID. I think many of those are sort of coming to an end. Obviously, we've gone through a period of much higher inflation. Luckily, that's begun to moderate. That was a really significant risk. I mean, geopolitics, I think that weighs on many people's minds. It's clearly highly uncertain. It's also outside of anybody's control. So I think being prepared for a range of different scenarios, ultimately seeing a bit more of a pickup in sentiment, in confidence. And I do think and I welcome the government's focus on economic reform and productivity. I think, certainly our view is we seek to constructively engage and provide some input on behalf of the more than 10 million personal customers that we serve and more than a million businesses. You know, reform is typically, you know, very challenging. There's never a solution that is equally happy about. And some of these things do take time, but I think it's a great conversation and discussion to be starting now to make sure that Australia continues to perform over the long term. We take advantage of some of the great assets that we've got in terms of, you know, large natural resources, you know, very stable government, secure, and, you know, a wonderful place to live. I think everyone could agree with that.
But just how hopeful are you of meaningful outcomes from the economic roundtables next week, and that it doesn't just become...
Look, I'm very hopeful that there's a great opportunity. It's multiple days. There's a number of important topics that are on the agenda. As I said, we certainly seek to engage, very constructively. You'll be realistic. These sorts of things can't be resolved over a three-day period. From our perspective, at least the view that we'd be taking is not the sorts of things that only could be done in a three-year or electoral cycle. I think we need to be thinking over the next 9 or 10 years. And obviously, those reforms, as I said, can be challenging. They need to be, well designed. They also have to be, politically sort of practical. And I think there's a role for business and hopefully many to be trying to advocate for sensible, balanced reforms that are in the long-term interests.
That's the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank there, Matt Comyn. And later in the podcast, we'll return to that interview to get a clearer idea of where he thinks artificial intelligence will go and how the bank is using it. But for now, Let's talk about wages, because we're being warned a pickup in productivity is needed to ensure real wages continues to rise. The ABS said today, while the wage price index remained at an annual rate of 3.4% in the June quarter, it comes as inflation continues to ease. So the difference between the wage price index and inflation represents a 1.3% increase in real wages. To tell us more, I spoke with David Brumbold, partner at Deloitte Access Economics. David, first of all, what does today's wages data say about the labour market and the economy?
Look, it's a reasonable outcome in terms of quarterly wage growth of 0.8%. Overall, though, we're in a bit of a flatter patch for the labour market. We've seen over the past 2 months the ABS suggesting there's been no overall jobs growth. We're seeing wage outcomes, while reasonable, are not as high as we were seeing a year or two ago. So the stronger labour market, where we're having a lot of skill shortages, is probably now a bit behind us. We're in now probably a steadier pace and indeed, you know, effectively a flatter patch over the past couple of months.
What's the outlook for jobs growth and the implication for the economy then?
So the outlook for jobs growth is still solid going forward. We're expecting, well, we've seen over the past year that jobs growth is at about 2%. Now that's down on what we've seen previously, but it's still a pretty good run rate. Although it's not enough to stop the unemployment rate from going up. So we've seen the unemployment rate drift up. It may drift up a little further. We're seeing some employers are cutting. We're seeing some redundancies across some sectors. So it's a flatter jobs market than we've seen for some time. In terms of the overall economic growth, again, we're seeing from broader GDP figures that it's pretty modest at the moment. What we've seen out of the wages data today is it does confirm that we do have some real wage growth coming through. So wage growth, 3.4%, is faster than underlying inflation, 2.7%. So that difference is going to be supportive of spending going forward.
Market challenges ahead, though. How much of it has to do with job creation and how much that word that we're going to be hearing a lot of over the next week, productivity?
Yeah, productivity has been a challenge for quite some time. And to make our wage growth sustainable, we do need a higher rate of productivity growth, and effectively that wage growth will end up going back into price growth and being self-defeating. So productivity is all important. Job creation is clearly important too, and the Reserve Bank is now starting to play a more active role there, stimulating the economy as we saw yesterday. That is part of the avenue to get economic growth onto a faster footing over the next year. So, you know, we expect that there'll be more from the Reserve Bank in the months to come to help stimulate the economy and to help stimulate jobs growth.
Finally, what do you think the message is to job seekers or workers who are looking at the level of pay rises, right, in this environment and the way the labour market is tracking? Given that we are starting to see real wages now rise, what should they be expecting?
Growth of 3.4% over the past year. That's a pretty good benchmark long term. If we think that the Reserve Bank is aiming for price growth of 2.5% and we do get productivity growth of the 0.7 to 1%, then that's about right. Ironically, we're now seeing wage growth when we're seeing real wage growth when the overall level. So when we were seeing faster rates of wage growth above 4%, we're actually seeing a real wage reduction because price growth was faster. Now prices have come down, wages have come down too, but we've got a gap. So a more modest ambition is actually more sustainable for the economy.
That's David Rumbens there from Deloitte Access Economics. Let's take a look at the Australian share market now, which did fall today. The S&P ASX 200 off by 0.6% at 8,827. Six of 11 sectors ended higher despite the decline in the 200. The best performing sectors, materials, followed by healthcare, but two sectors especially did quite poorly. Utilities did down by 2.9%, and financials down by 2.5%. If we take a look at the best and worst performers, AGL Energy, the worst performer today, down by 13.1%, followed by Beach Energy, 7.5% weaker. The Commonwealth Bank also took a bit of a tumble, off by 5.4%, but remember, it's up quite significantly over the past year. The best performer, Alcoa, up by 7%, followed by Qantas, which rose 5.6% today. For all her analysis of the day's market action, I spoke with Junbei Liu, portfolio manager at
Junbei, the ASX is down today after hitting a record high yesterday. Why?
Look, it's actually all about the banks. The CBA reported today, being the market index weight, a heavyweight, share price actually went down more than 4%. High index lower. And then it got investors start worrying about maybe the companies with valuation or, you know, issues, the expensive companies, will have a bit of challenge to outperform in this market.
I want to talk about CBA in a few moments, but a few more macro things. RBA cutting interest rates yesterday. What's the market?
Yeah, look, the market is still looking for between 2 and 3 cuts so far for this year. You know, with 50-50 of the third cut. So we're still looking at many rate cuts to come through. And that is beneficial for our share market.
What about US interest rates? We know inflation remained at an annual overnight. What's your take on the US economy right now?
Yeah, U.S. economy actually turned out to be a little bit more resilient than expected. So growth has turned out to be okay. This inflation number is that everyone was expecting the tariff surely will be translating through to higher inflation, but it hasn't. So, you know, you see that can sort of give the market a bit of boost, and that is quite quite promising for the U.S. market over there.
Okay, you mentioned the Commonwealth Bank. Let's take a look at it in more detail. A 10.3 record. Its shares, though, have taken a bit of a thumping comparatively today, extending recent losses, but it does follow a very solid year. There have been questions about its lofty valuations. So can you run through what are investors worried about today following seeing these results? Because I think a lot of me, if I'm wrong, that can Australia's biggest and strongest bank get even stronger?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, you're very right. And that's a right question to ask, because today's result was actually pretty good. The company didn't miss analyst expectations. It came out a little bit stronger than expected. Margin is okay in line, and no guidance, but normally CBA doesn't give guidance. And the capital, however, what's really changed in this result is that, you know, there's no special capital return initiatives anymore. So which we saw sort of came to an end with other banks 6 months ago. You know, we saw ANZ refuse to do the proper DIP. They have to sub-underwrite DRP and the like, which is in the form of is now done. And in an environment where, you know, you're seeing the margins under a bit of pressure, there's a bit of higher bad debt, and it's not as bad, but it just things that it's sort of turning from a tailwind, seeing that the market is finally realizing maybe valuation is a problem. CBA is trading at 60% premium to what it used to be over the last decade. And on this, you know, earnings increase momentum, and also, and now they're saying there's no more.
So when investors like yourself, and I mean, given that it is the largest company on the market, right, when investors like yourself look at the CBA and ask whether or not we should be investing, what are the questions you're asking?
No place the better for your money than investing in CBA. You know, I think CBA is still, you know, a good investment if you take a really long-term view. But for the next 12 months, because how expensive it is, where particularly in the environment where, you know, our domestic economy is totally up okay, we've got all the interest rate cut coming through, we have a lot of companies earnings will grow a whole lot faster than CBA and much cheaper. So that's where you'd be putting the money.
Any other profit results you're keeping an eye on today?
Today we heard from AGL that, you know, the utility providers sort of came out with a disappointing outlook, even though our electricity prices is reasonably flat to you know, well expected. It all comes down to the big investment they to make. Share price was down as much as almost 15%, which is highly unusual for a utility company. It just goes to show that, look, investors don't have much patience for disappointment, perhaps a little bit too expensive for what they're delivering.
And finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Look, I do think the clients, it's very important for the share markets to stay investors, because we are, and we've got many more to come, that will give our domestic economy a much needed boost, which means the share market will see another leg up. The sectors that's most beneficial to a falling interest rate are property, housing related sectors, and perhaps your technology company.
It's Junbei Liu there from 10Cap. Let's now return to my interview with Matt Common from the Commonwealth Bank. There was one area we haven't mentioned yet, and that is information technology and, more importantly, artificial intelligence. Of course, it comes as the bank posted a record cash profit of $10.25 billion. Now, we know you're using AI across the business in areas like scam prevention and customer service, and you've just signed a deal with OpenAI to further develop services. But what can you tell me about how generative AI will be used, will see, and how employees will use it?
Yeah, so there's a number of partnerships that we have with some of the global leading firms. Anthropic is another. We're working very closely with them, particularly on software. We announced the partnership, a multi-year partnership with OpenAI. Look, I think there's a number of ways we're going to seek to work with them, both internally for our people, and I think it's important to be able to both support a better customer experience as well as build capability. I just think it's going to be another skill that we're all going to need to have, just proficiency. The use of these technologies. And then, I mean, you touched on it. We're already using AI to support better, you know, fraud and scams protection. Scams, as an example, we're down sort of 76% years ago. And so there's a lot of technology uses in those areas to protect our customers, to help keep both their information and, of course, their money safe. We're already using it now to support some of our relationship managers. We use it to detect, you know, fraud and variety of we just want to make the experience simpler, better. We're obviously, you know, very conscious of using or making sure our customers know where we're using it. We're ultimately responsible for all of the decisions that we make or any technology. And so from our perspective, we need to be investing. We need to learn effort into making sure the responsible and safe use of AI.
And finally, what role do you think the bank plays to facilitate AI education? And while many CEOs that I speak to are optimistic about the opportunities for the workforce, the jobs will go, and perhaps the new jobs won't be enough to make up the shortfall.
Well, I think, firstly, from a capability perspective, I think our role, as I said, is to build both proficiency and skills internally, both for our own staff, in ways that supports the customers, to help some smaller businesses. We've got to try and think through how to best do that. I think with any technology and all of the technology cycles we've seen before, it's quite understandable for there to be some nervousness and about the uncertainty. It's obviously impossible to predict, prepared, and investing and getting to learn. How to use AI is important. I mean, secondly, where there's growth and where Australia does well, I think this is a really important overarching principle. We need to be very focused from a policy perspective on making sure any benefits that come from AI are for Australian, for Australia. And so then I think, yes, there may be changes to work composition, but overall, where there's growth, there's new jobs. So I just think it's too early and it's very difficult to protect. I think we have to, you know, engage and work very constructively. But as you said, be very aware of the risks and the uncertainty and seek to put Australia in a position where, you know, we simply can't compete, because these sorts of technologies extend beyond all geographic boundaries. And so I think it's part of a really important and ongoing dialogue, but hopefully, you know, all of our customers will start to see experience that they're delivering. And we've seen that over the last multiple decades with the internet and, you know, digitization.
That's Matt Common there, the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank. And he wraps up the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday. Tomorrow we've got official jobs numbers from the ABS, hoping to bring you an interview too with the CEO of Origin Energy. Do give this podcast a rating or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts if you enjoy it.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.